ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today, on this all-star show, we speak with two Grammy-winning artists. The first won her award this year for Best Children's Album, and the second is considered one of the greatest Native American recording artists ever, plus Blackstone's special feature written by a French rock star. Right here after the news you want to know. Thank you for joining us. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
And I'm Maya Seligman. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. E.L. James's 50 Shades of Grey trilogy, a word-of-mouth romance smash so erotic it's sometimes labeled mommy porn, has been signed up by a paperback division of Random House, Inc. Vintage Books recently announced that it had acquired the three books, 50 Shades of Grey, 50 Shades Darker, and 50 Shades Freed. Ebook editions and paperbacks are available starting this month.
There's a lot of buzz about this trilogy. I saw it on today's show.
Yeah, it's popular. The novels have been distributed by an Australia-based publisher, the Writer's Coffee Shop Publishing House. The trilogy follows the romance between a young billionaire, Christian Grey, and a college student, Anastasia Steele. It has sold more than 250,000 copies. And the first volume was number one on both Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
And Publishers Weekly.
Ooh. 50 has taken me on an extraordinary and wholly unexpected adventure, and I'm thrilled to be continuing it with Vintage, James recently said. I've heard from so many readers trying to find these books in their local bookshops and libraries. It is gratifying to know that they will soon become widely available in the U.S. and around the world. James's trilogy began as fan fiction, a thriving genre online in which fans write variations of their favorite books and characters, stories usually intended solely for fellow aficionados. James used the vampire Edward and teen Bella from Stephanie Meyer's mega-selling Twilight and placed them in Seattle. First called Master of the Universe and published 2 years ago on the website, James's stories attracted a strong following and were released commercially in 2011 by Writer's Coffee Shop. The success of the books has set off a strong debate online. On a chat room for NBC's Today show, which ran a recent segment on the trilogy, several negative messages were posted, saying it was wrong for readers to pay for a trilogy originally available for free, and that Christian and Anastasia were stand-ins for Edward and Bella. Romance author and blogger Sarah Wendell said similarities to Twilight included the hero's long hands, the klutzy heroine with auburn hair, and the narrative being told from the heroine's very deep first-person point of view. The themes of Twilight are very much repeated, she said. Innocent heroine, dark, emotionally unavailable hero. It's a wealth of fantasy as well as neurotic fantasy.
Interesting, yeah. When I saw it on Today show, they had two different arguments. One was that it promoted the domination of women, and then the other side of that was that women want to be dominated. So I don't know. What's your take on that, Maya?
I think everyone has their own fantasy, and we should make room for everyone to get to explore it in their own ways, especially if it's in the imagination. Hey.
Well, if PayPal would have had their way, you wouldn't have been able to get the Shades of Grey trilogy on Smashwords. But I guess that decision has been released, and the Smashwords president, Mark Coker, released this letter after that reversal by PayPal. Wanting to take a stance to censor content on the popular ebook site Smashwords. Thank you to every Smashwords author and publisher who wrote me to express opinions, even if we disagreed. And even if you were angry with me, you inspired me to carry on your cause. I would like to thank the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF, the American Booksellers Foundation for Free Expression, ABFFE, and the National Coalition Against Censorship, NCAC. These three advocacy groups were the first to stand up for our authors, publishers, and customers. Their contribution cannot be overstated. We collaborated with them to build a coalition of like-minded organizations to support our mutual cause. I would like to thank our friends at PayPal. They worked with us in good faith as they promised, engaged us in dialogue, made the effort to understand Smashwords and our mission, went to bat for our authors with the credit card companies and banks, and showed the courage to revise their policies. This is a big, bold move by PayPal. It represents a watershed decision that protects the rights of writers to write, publish, and distribute legal fiction. It also protects the rights of readers to purchase and enjoy all fiction in the privacy of their own imagination. It clarifies and rationalizes the role of financial service providers and pulls them out of the business of censoring legal fiction. Following implementation of their new policies, PayPal will have the most liberal, pro-First Amendment policies of the major payment processors. Will Google Checkout and Checkout by Amazon be next now that the credit card companies have clarified their positions and have essentially given payment providers the permission to adopt more enlightened policies?
You know what? I sure hope so.
I guess we all do, and we'll see as we move forward.
So what was PayPal trying to do in the beginning?
Well, they were trying to censor erotic material, but I guess they found that you can't, you know, censor people's imaginations.
That's right. We have wild imaginations sometimes.
Definitely. So, you know, and Mark Coker went on to say, this is a bright day for indie publishing. In the old world, traditional publishers were the arbiters of literary merit. Today, thanks to the rise of indie ebooks, the world is moving toward a broader, more inclusive definition of literary merit. And according to him, merit is no longer decided by the publisher, it's decided by the readers.
I like that. The general public has more power.
Right. So we don't need gatekeepers anymore. I guess we've matured enough to be able to read whatever and still perform our functions daily.
You know, I thought we went through that censorship thing in the 50s.
Yeah, and in the 50s, you probably wouldn't be able to read books like Harry Potter even.
Yeah, things have changed. And for the better. Well, you know, Cyrus, at last Harry Potter's adventures are available electronically. The 7 novels about J.K. Rowling's boy wizard are for sale as ebooks and audiobooks on the author's Pottermore website.
Kids with their Kindles and tablets are going to love this.
And they're actually available in English in U.S. and U.K. editions, with the first 3 titles priced at $7.99 for ebooks and $29.99 for audio versions. The site says French, Italian, German, and Spanish editions will follow in the coming weeks. The books are available only through the website, and they are compatible with major electronic readers, including Amazon's Kindle, Sony's Reader, and Barnes & Noble's Nook, as well as tablets, mobile phones, PCs, and e-readers on Google's Play. The Harry Potter novels have sold 450 million copies, but Rowling for years resisted making the books available in digital form. She announced last year that Potter ebooks would be sold through the Pottermore site, an interactive portal into Harry's magical world. The full site, which combines elements of virtual encyclopedia, computer games, social network, and their online store, is set to open this month. Its launch, originally announced for October, was delayed after initial testing showed changes were needed. Rowling's final Potter novel, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, was published in 2007. The author announced last month that she is working on a novel for adults, whose title and release date have not yet been disclosed.
Yeah, well, that's great news. Yeah, we were talking about the Pottermore site on an earlier show. So I guess here they are. They're up and running. And it sounds like a lot of fun. It's supposed to be really interactive, too.
Yeah, you know, she's working on books for adults because if you think about it, all the kids who loved her books when they first came out, they're now adults.
Right. So she's definitely got an audience that's grown up reading her and will probably continue to read her works.
Mm-hmm. You're a grown up now?
Yeah. Well, one of America's greatest literary talents also shares the initials JK, although he didn't share in the same financial success in his lifetime, he is now being recognized posthumously. Jack Kerouac's only full-length play will be staged for the first time this fall. Merrimack Repertory Theater and the University of Massachusetts Lowell said Monday, on what would have been Kerouac's 90th birthday, that they will produce a three-act play called Beat Generation in a novelist's hometown of Lowell, Massachusetts. The premiere of the play, a staged reading for eight performances only, will be the centerpiece of the 2012 Jack Kerouac Literary Festival, which will be held from October 10th through October 14th. Kerouac wrote Beat Generation, which draws on his life and those of other beat writers, including Neil Cassidy and Allen Ginsberg, in 1957, the same year his classic On the Road was released. He tried to build interest for Beat Generation in the theater world, contacting such people as Lillian Hellman and Marlon Brando, but he failed and set the manuscript aside. Kerouac died in 1969. The manuscript was found in a warehouse in 2005. This is a moment of literary and theatrical history, said Charles Towers, artistic director of the Merrimack Repertory Theater, which also produced a stage adaptation of Kerouac's Lowell-set romance, Maggie Cassidy. Kerouac's other books include Dr. Sax, The Subterraneans, The Darum Bums, and his final great work, Big Sur. The author's first actual novel, the 158-page The Sea Is My Brother, was published recently in honor of the writer's birthday. The work, written when Kerouac was 21, is a tale of two young men serving on a voyage from Boston to Greenland. This book is also available through Blackstone, and I actually helped engineer it.
Did you?
Yeah, just a couple months ago.
Well, that's great. Doesn't Blackstone do the book Darum Bums as well?
It does, yeah. Another great book by Kerouac. And, of course, the Beat Generation has inspired poets ever since Allen Ginsberg read Howl and Dave Harvey over in Talent. You know, he always thinks of his poetry reading as a beatnik-inspired event that he hosts every second Thursday. And, of course, we featured mm-hmm. him on our show. On our inaugural show a while back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of creativity. I love that when people give us examples of how to use that creativity in community ways and share it with other people.
Definitely, yeah. And on April 12th, they're going to be having their award ceremony at the downtown coffee house in Talent. Dave is going to announce who the winner is this year.
Mm, let's go.
Yeah, let's do it. Just Imagine Inc., we're going to be helping with the grand prize. And Charlie's also offered to bring a winner on the show.
I can't wait to hear it. Whoa, yeah, baby. Can't wait to hear it. Well, you know, speaking of audiobooks, there are celebrities that are now getting involved.
Yeah, I saw Anne Hathaway reading The Wizard of Oz on YouTube. They had a video clip of it.
Wow.
Yeah, she uses all kinds of expressions in her reading. It's something else.
Vocal or facial?
Facial. Yeah, she's sitting alone in this booth, but she's got these dramatic facial expressions as she's reading The Wizard of Oz.
The passion for it. I guess the people listening don't necessarily get that little perk.
Right, but maybe somehow it
translates into her words.
Definitely.
Well, when it came to reading a book out loud, Dustin Hoffman was a bit rusty. The last time he had done something similar was in New York City in the late 60s, right after filming The Graduate. A local radio station had recruited 30 or so people, including Hoffman, to read War and Peace on the air around the clock until it was done. That was the only other time I had done something like that, and it was wonderful, recalls Hoffman, explaining why he recently agreed to perform the novel Being There by Jerzy Kosinski, a Polish writer and an old, now deceased friend. Hoffman is part of an all-star cast of actors who have signed on with Audible.com to bring classic novels to life for a fast-growing population of audiobook fans worldwide. Other participants include Samuel L. Jackson, Susan Sarandon, Kate Winslet, Nicole Kidman, and many more.
Wow, that's like a who's who of Hollywood.
That's right. And you know what, Cyrus? Additions to the A-list series are going to be rolling out on a regular basis indefinitely.
How cool is that?
Yeah! That is awesome, baby! The push behind this project was bolstered by healthy growth in the audiobook market, which is a $1 billion industry. The Audio Publishers Association is a trade group that has 68 audiobook publisher members, including such independent companies as AudioGo, Blackstone, Brilliance, and Tantor Audio. In the last 5 years, the total number of audiobooks published annually has doubled, and downloads have grown 300% by dollar volume.
You know, I just love audiobooks, and I think that I've become more accustomed listening to them than reading them.
Well, you know what, Cyrus, you're not the only one. There are a lot of students who are actually choosing to do it that way now for their books as well.
Yeah, I think the entire Ohio State team, when they were coming off the bus, they were all listening to audiobooks.
They've got their headphones on.
Exactly. Well, Maya, you're right. I mean, the audiobook industry, you know, books are more digital now with the Kindle Fire and all that, like we've been talking about. And so much so, everything's changed the whole landscape that Encyclopedia Britannica said Tuesday it will stop publishing print editions of its flagship encyclopedia for the first time since the sets were originally published more than 200 years ago.
That is a long time. I didn't know they've been printing them that long.
Yeah, in fact, the book form of Encyclopedia Britannica has been in print since it was first published in Edinburgh, Scotland in 1768.
Love that Edinburgh.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking about Edinburgh later with The Boy with the Cuckoo Clock Heart. It will stop being available when the current stock runs out. The Chicago-based company will continue to offer digital versions of the encyclopedia. Officials said the end of the print 32-volume set has been foreseen for some time. This has nothing to do with Wikipedia or Google, the Encyclopedia Britannica president said. This has to do with the fact that now Britannica sells its digital products to a large number of people. The top year for the printed encyclopedia was 1990, when 120,000 sets were sold. That number fell to 40,000 just 6 years later. The final hardcover encyclopedia set is available for sale at Britannica's website for $1,395. The company started exploring digital publishing in the 1970s. The first CD-ROM version was available in 1989, and a version went online in 1994. Online versions of the encyclopedia now serve more than 100 million people around the world and are available on mobile devices. The encyclopedia has become increasingly social as well because users can send comments to editors. Britannica has thousands of expert contributors from around the world, including Nobel laureates and world leaders such as former President Bill Clinton. It also has a staff of more than 100 editors. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Quite a change. Encyclopedia Britannica is, you know, been known for some time as, you know, a staple.
You know, in high school, I remember in 1990, the peak time when it was being sold as books, we had some in our house. We had the full set in our house, and it was a little bit dusty.
Yeah, I remember having encyclopedias in the house as well. You know, and you could flip through them, but you couldn't bring them anywhere.
You'd have to stay at home to read them.
Right. So, you know, it's great that now you can have that same information on a tablet and you can carry it with you wherever you go.
Yeah, definitely. Well, from books to rap, Jay-Z came, saw, and conquered at Austin City Limits Live during last month's performance as part of South by Southwest. He was in the Moody Theater for this popular PBS concert series, and he packed the venue with a standing room only crowd of more than 2,700 people. I did a little research.
I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah, me too. Jay-Z's 80-minute show marked the end of South by Southwest's interactive conference and an unofficial start to its music conference. Streaming live online, the show promoted American Express's new partnership with Twitter. It was packed with hits, including 99 Problems, Dirt Off Your Shoulder, Empire State of Mind, and Glory, which is his ode to Blue Ivy Carter, his two-month-old daughter he has with Beyoncé. His appearance was fitting in a year when rap appears to be a main draw at South by Southwest. Lil Wayne, Nas, T.I., B.O.B., and many others were included with shows in Austin. Jay-Z, wearing a cap with a polka dot brim, his trademark sunglasses, and a sparkling gold chain, led the crowd in several rap-alongs and kept everyone on their feet. Fans lined up for entrance more than 2 hours before showtime. I'm feeling a lot of love in this building, Jay-Z said to the crowd. I'm feeling a lot of love in this city today. You had a beautiful time, and I had a beautiful time. Yeah, I don't know who I like best, Jay-Z or Kanye West. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going with Beyonce.
Yeah, you would say that.
So from, the new classics to the old classics, and what some art experts say would be one of the biggest discoveries of the century, researchers in Italy think they have discovered a long-lost painting by Leonardo da Vinci. Scientists using endoscopic probes took a look behind a 16th century fresco in Florence and say they found traces of black paint that matches the pigment used in St. John the Baptist and in the Mona Lisa, da Vinci's most famous painting, of course.
Of course.
The team, composed of researchers from National Geographic, University of California, San Diego, and the city of Florence, believes a Renaissance painter's unfinished Battle of Angari, which da Vinci started in 1504, lies beneath the fresco. This data is very encouraging, the lead researcher told reporters at a press conference, adding, although we are still in the preliminary stages of the research, and there is still a lot of work to be done to solve this mystery, the evidence does suggest that we are searching in the right place. Other experts in the art world are more skeptical about the findings. What do they mean, saying these findings are compatible with Leonardo? Said an art historian who launched a petition to stop the research. Any painting from the Renaissance would be. Anything from that era could be painted on that wall. So I guess we'll have to see how that turns out.
Sounds controversial.
Well, you know, it's like in the Discovery Channel when you see they're looking in the Mediterranean Sea for Roman, ships that have sunk, you know, and you hear about it, and then you got to wait for them to actually go down there with submarines and find the stuff.
Well, I wish I could time travel and be Mona Lisa.
Yeah, and I could go and be Leonardo da Vinci and paint you.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
So if I painted you, would you still have that same Mona Lisa smile?
Could be.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Blackstone's special feature.
I'll stand here in the corner and I'll blend in with the wall.
When you keep your chin up, you keep your head high.
They may not even notice that I'm here today at all.
When you keep your chin up, you keep your head high.
I'll try to be invisible while staring in at the ground. I will not raise my hand today or even make a sound. And maybe if I'm lucky, they'll forget that I'm around.
I know it isn't easy, friend, but here is how and why. When you keep your chin up, you keep your head high.
Gloria Domina and her team won the Grammy this year in the Best Children's Album category, and she shared the love with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting episode of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today we have on Grammy winner Gloria Domina, whose album... all about boys, big and small. Boy, they do come in all kinds of sizes.
Yes, they do, in all ages.
Well, congratulations on the Grammy win.
Thank you so much. And I was not the only producer. Steve Pallera and James Crivero and Kevin Mackey and Pat Robinson and myself were the producers. And it was produced at East Coast Recording Studio in Warminster, Pennsylvania, who donated hundreds of hours of time for the project. So I'm proud to be standing alongside of them.
Well, that's quite a distinguished group you have there. You know,
Thank you.
When you guys were all getting together to do this album, you know, the subject matter is something that needs to be addressed. But how did the whole idea come to fruition?
Well, actually, Steve Pallera, one of our producers, came up with the idea, and... you know, it's something that happens to all of us, and or we have family members that have been bullied. We have been bullied, and it's sadly a thing that is in epidemic forces right now.
And do you think it's predominant in the United States, or do you think it just happens all around the world?
I think it happens all around the world. I do think that, you know, living here in the United States, I can only speak for the United States, but I can say that... I would say in the last 3 years, bullying has gotten worse and worse and worse.
And what do you attribute that to, the internet?
The internet, also, adults bully as well. Coaches bully, you know, if you don't turn around and, you know, get a touchdown or make your baskets, you're not going to play in the next game. And parents bully in different ways as well, saying, you know, if you don't eat everything on your plate, you're going to bed without dessert, or wait till your father comes home. And
I heard that my whole life.
Right, right. And my whole theory in life is not what you say to somebody, it's how you say it. So hopefully we got the message out in a positive way, and we'll continue to be able to help through the CD and through going out and speaking about anti-bullying.
Well, you know, it's wonderful that you've done this. And what was the idea behind the music?
Well, we wanted to put together music, poems, stories, and put it in a playground type of setting. So it's what happens basically on a playground, and I guess the playground is a metaphor for our lives. And we got together with we brought together lots of artists that, you know, donated their time as well. Little Stevie Van Sant and Eric Bazillion and Blue October and, you know, Heidi Swedberg, and we have 37 tracks, and every single track has to do with something about bullying, and we tried to do it in an upbeat and positive way.
Well, you know, you really accomplished that, and that's quite a collection of artists you have there, a lot of well-known artists. The, you know, I've heard the CD, and, you know, my favorite track was track 13.
I'm small, full of charm, having loving arms and a pretty face, but I was ignored because I used my wheelchair to get from place to place. Kids would make like they didn't notice my presence, even though I was there. Yet, I'd hear bad names about me and notice their heavy stares. I have talent and play as hard as anybody can see, but I was often the last one chosen for teams because of just being me.
Oh, really?
It
Track
was.
13, I actually wrote. And
did you?
Cindy, yes, I did. And Cindy Drew, she's a Philadelphia DJ, she performed it for me. She did the spoken word on it, and Jim Crivera, he did all of the sound effects at the East Coast Recording Studio. I think that incorporating a disabled child was necessary, so that's why I did that one.
You know, hats off to you, because, boy, I tell you what, it's by far and away, you know, well it's my personal favorite.
Thank you.
I encourage everyone to, you know, to go out and get the CD, and they can develop their own taste on that. But, wow, I mean, you know, where'd you come up with the idea, you know?
Well, I came up with the idea because being different doesn't make you any less than someone else, or having a handicap doesn't make you any less than someone else. And we can learn a lot and be role models if we're in wheelchairs or if we're on crutches or if we have a disease or whatever. And we're all the same. You take all that away, you shut off the lights, we're all the same.
Wow, what a great concept, you know? That is, you know, so remarkable.
Thank you.
So what do you have on the horizon here? What are you working on next, or is this an ongoing struggle?
Actually, it's an ongoing struggle. We don't know what we're working on next. Everybody keeps asking us that. Of course, you know, we have great ideas and great input from everybody, but we have not even gotten together as a group to decide what we'll be working on next.
Well,
we're still running off of the Grammy. The Grammy win, it's quite exciting, and also through it we hope that the CD was made to profit a national organization against anti-bullying, PACERKidsAgainstBullying.org, and all of our proceeds go to that organization. So we're hoping with the Grammy win more people buy the CD to help support them.
Where can they buy the CD?
They can buy the CD right on our website at All About Bullies. BigAndSmall.com, and there are many links. There's 4 or 5 links on there that you can purchase it through.
Oh, great.
Now, it's also on CD Baby on their website.
Oh, okay, CD Baby, yeah. We're near and dear to our heart. We know all about CD Baby. They're from our state.
Oh, really? That's nice. That's nice. Yeah, they did our last project as well. Last year we were Grammy nominated in Spoken Word for Children for Healthy Food for Thought, and all of the proceeds went to the New York Coalition on Healthy Eating in School, giving kids choices of how to eat. You know, you go into a school lunchroom, there's pizza and there's pierogies and there's french fries, and we just wanted to help give them more choices.
Yeah, I think they would. They would enjoy that, too. I have a 7- and 8-year-old daughter, and while Pizza Friday is their favorite, they would really like to go for some salads, too.
Yeah, so that's what Healthy Food for Thought is about. And also you can go to healthyfoodforthought.com and see the Grammy-nominated CD that we did last year.
Now, winning the Grammy, Gloria, were you surprised? Were you taken back? I mean, I'm sure it was exhilarating.
Well, from what I hear, there were over 300 people that submitted and over 150 nominees that were finally there. And then to come down to the five nominees was in the world was absolutely crazy. And then to be chosen the best in the children's category was a total, well, I'm not going to say that it was shocking. I'm going to tell you that I'm still not believing it. But our main focus was to bring awareness to anti-bullying. And by winning the Grammy, so many more people know about it. And you know, I can tell you people at the Grammys were coming up and they were just saying, listening to the CD and hearing the CD. And not only that, but us winning gave them chills, and I was like, wow, that is totally amazing, because, like I said, either you or I have been bullied, or someone we love has been bullied, so bullying is very prevalent.
You know, it is, and you're absolutely right. I think, you know, everyone at some point in their life has been bullied, and I would also take it a step further and say that I think at some point in their lives, most people have bullied somebody else as well.
And maybe, exactly.
And maybe not even recognize that they were doing that. So the education is so important.
Right, and that's what we're basically trying to do, is not only making people aware of bullying, but making the bullies aware that they are bullies as well, and trying to do it in a very significant way.
Right, you know, because, you know, being a parent, you lots of times you see your children do things that they don't even recognize as, you know, being harmful. Until you point it out to them and say, hey, you know what, that's not cool. That hurts somebody's feelings. And then they're like, Oh, I didn't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the television they watch.
Well, yeah, television and those games, not to mention any kind of products, but all of those games about killings and shootings and beatings up. I parents really need to monitor what their children are watching and what they're listening to, and even with music. I mean, you turn on the radio and it's supposed to be a family channel, and you just, you know, who's killing who and who's doing what to who. So I really think that it's the adult's responsibility to monitor what your children and your grandchildren and your students are listening to and what they're hearing and what they're watching on TV and the games that they're playing.
Right, and that's an important thing. You know, not only do we have the responsibility of teaching and educating them, but, you know, at the same time, you know, we have also, I think, a responsibility not to create, you know, stuff like this. And we're signing off on it every time we say that it's cool, you know, to, you know, hey, what is it? Grand Theft Auto. That was one of the biggest games out there, you know?
Right,
and
right.
So what are we saying? We're saying, you know, go steal a car and beat some people up on the way and, you know, you're a winner.
Wow. Yeah. It's scary because everybody, especially our children, are so impressionable. And if they see us watching those things or see us, you know, laughing to things like that, you know, they think it's okay. We lead by example. We lead by example. We can tell our kids to do anything, but what we do shows them how to act.
Exactly. You know, that's a point well taken. It's not what you say. It's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And while your intentions may be good, people aren't judged by their intentions. They're judged by their actions. And this is a lesson we need to give to our children.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why we did this CD as well. And we have families that say that, you know, their kids have listened to this in the car over 200 times and they don't even mind it. They enjoy it. They like it. And even though it's focused to children, it's a family CD.
No, it really is. It rocks. You know?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And, you know, having people on there that donated their time and their talent. I can't even mention everybody. I mean, Grover Silcox and Barry Lewis Polisar and Cindy Drew and John Flynn and the Only Human Band with Whitney Payton. And we had everything on there from doing poetry and stories to rap and pop and rock. And it just, we were able to put this together. And I have to give all the credit to the other producers for their imagination and their talents. Without Jim and Steve and Pat and Kevin, I don't even, you know, like, It's amazing to me how dedicated these people are. But I do want to thank another person, Kristen Wickline. She, without her and without her support, I'll tell you, she was out there promoting us and being one of our publicists, and she was so dedicated and gave as many hours, if not more, than the producers did. So I want to thank Kristen as well.
Well, you know, it sounds like there's quite a talented group of people working there, and I hope everyone goes out and get your CD, and I hope, more importantly, that they learn the lesson and pass it on to the younger generation.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too. That was our main reason for doing the CD.
Well, a mission accomplished, and congratulations on your Grammy. We look forward to your next project, and when you get your next project going, Gloria, will you come back on and tell us all about it?
Sure, and I would like to, maybe we can get all the other producers together, and we can all do this together.
That sounds like a great idea to me.
I thank you so much for all your time and your efforts and helping us get the word out. And once again, they can go to PACERKidsAgainstBullying.org to see why we did this CD. And they can go to AllAboutBulliesBigAndSmall.com if they'd like to order a CD.
All right. And I encourage everyone to do that. And thank you so much again for being on. Everyone go out and get yourself a copy of it. And you'll be glad that you did. Thank you,
Gloria. Thank you so much.
To learn more about All About Bullies Big and Small, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Joanne Shenandoah of the Iroquois people sings to inspire another seven generations. She spoke with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today we have on Joanne Shenandoah from New York. And welcome to the show, Joanne.
Well, thanks, Charlie. Appreciate you having me on. You know, life's been pretty amazing of late. A lot of good things and exciting projects and worldwide travel. You know, I've been very blessed.
You know, you certainly have, and for all of our listening audience out there, Joanne is a singer, and you've had quite a celebrated career, over 40 music awards, and including including, you know, 13 Native American awards.
Yeah. I mean, awards are one thing, but you know what? The first time I went to the Grammys, they sat me next to Beyonce, and it was the first time I ever saw the Grammys.
Oh, really?
It wasn't one of my major goals in life was just to win a Grammy. It was to be true to, you know, my creator-given self. I mean, what the creator gave me is a gift of song and of music. And, you know, that's what I love. That's what I do. And so that's what I focus on. And so the awards are just kind of a thank you for keeping, I guess, true to yourself. Something that I also aspire to is leaving a legacy, you know, also living my life where it will have an effect for seven generations into the future, and that's the Iroquois way. That's just something that came from the Iroquois people of New York. We say that everything that we do in life, including whether it's interviewing someone on radio,
uh-huh,
whether it's planting trees, whether it's making a better way, we all are responsible for seven generations from now. So that's a pretty awesome thing.
That is a pretty awesome thing, and that's quite a goal that we have to live up to, and it's a noble one at that. So, you know, there's a couple of things that, you know, really intrigue me about some of your past work, and I just would be remiss if I didn't ask you about it, because I know our listeners are interested in it. You were at Woodstock in 94, right?
Yeah.
How was that?
This is incredible. Oh, my gosh. I mean, there I am singing a song about all people and all colors coming together at the opening of Woodstock. I know MTV was giving away Fender guitars to to people who could name my name.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah, it was pretty awesome. But yeah, 400,000 plus. I mean, it was a sea of people. And it was just a real, you know, delight to be there and to actually open up with Doc, because I know that there were people like Red Hot Chili Peppers, Carlos Santana, people who are really rooting to have Native people, because we are the original people of this land, of what we call Turtle Island.
Uh-huh.
And while we certainly appreciate and respect our ancestors, we also know that we have to live in harmony and balance with each other and the natural world. And if we of course ignore that, you know, life is not as good as it could be. So a lot of, I think, musicians, politicians, spiritual people, such as the Dalai Lama, Nelson Mandela, many, many leaders around the world are looking to Native spirituality as kind of an example of how we will survive through the 2012, how we will continue to bring peace and harmony, and also learn to live with each other in many respects. I think that's, you know, something that's going to be looked at. We now put together a wonderful production. It's called Hiawatha Institute for Indigenous Knowledge with Syracuse University.
Uh-huh.
And this has been in the works for 12 years. There are 55 degreed professionals of Iroquois teachers, and we want to help to bring Indigenous knowledge to the world. So it's hiawatha.syr.edu, and we are working in conjunction with SU to bring courses of sustainability, language, justice systems, environment, agriculture, everything of our knowledge of our ancestors to the world. And we will do that via the web at some point, and we will make it available to any institution and all people who want to learn. And we're very excited about that. Yeah, you can look online at the website. It's Hiawatha, for those who might have heard of Hiawatha, hiawatha.syr.edu.
Great. I encourage everyone to look that up and maybe take a course. I think I might do that myself.
I know. It's going to be really exciting in the coming years, because there are a number of elders who want to offer their wisdom, and we're hoping that we'll be able to make that available via the web, and that's our plan. So we're working on it. It's, you know, a big job. We've been at this for about 12 years now, trying to pull it all together.
Well, you know, it's a very, very good goal, and, you know, with the web, it's just almost like there's nothing you can't do anymore, and you just have the whole world right there at your doorstep.
Isn't that great?
You know what? Actually, it is.
It is, because, you know, before my trip to Israel and Palestine, I really did not understand the complexity of the lives of the people who live there. And, you know, it was a real eye-opener for me. I mean, a lot of people, I think, in this country don't understand what's going on around the world and how blessed we are to be able to sing what we want to sing, to say what we want to say, to be able to worship who we want to worship, and to not be, you know,
to not be in prison for your beliefs. No, you know what?
I had a couple tell me when they came to the concert, like after the concert, I was like going up the stairs in the to the lobby, and they said, Joanne, we want to just thank you for tonight. We're from Jerusalem, and we took a chance coming here. We could be arrested and also imprisoned and fined $30,000 for being here tonight.
Yeah, it's pretty primitive over there. I have a friend who is from Palestine, and he travels back and forth. This is where his family's from. He lives in the United States now, and I asked him the last time he was there, I said, did you go to the beach? And we were just having breakfast, and he just made a very natural remark. He just goes, oh, no, Charlie, because, you know, I can't go to the beach. You know, my I can go because I'm an American citizen, but then, you know, my wife and her family can't go. We have to go through the Israeli border, and if you go on a good day, no one got shot. If you go on a regular day, You've got so many border crossings you got to go through and checkpoints and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but, I mean, I was so surprised at that discussion. They go, but to hear you sing, it was worth it. I'm like, good heavens. You know, oh my gosh. You know, and to live in a country where you can't control your own water or your electricity, I mean, not to make it all about politics, but I'll tell you what, the world in general would be a great place to look at the traditional teachings of what the Iroquois elders had to say. What they said was, we look at our own natural gifts. We use them as a means by which to make the world a better place. And if we share them with a good mind, everything around us is in a good place. It will continue to be good. So, I mean, imagine that. All the people that you know love what they do. They love their jobs. They love their work. And that in itself is a healing. And you know enough people who are sick because they've stressed themselves out or they just don't know where they belong,
you know, that's,
or what they're supposed to do.
That's quite a common theme throughout humanity. In our country, it's, you know, all about people that have, you know, worked there. I worked my whole life at the factory. I can't stand it, but it's bread on the table. And they're always, you know, they're in disharmony and they're never at peace with themselves because they're not doing what they want to do or not using their God-given talents, you know?
Right, exactly. So that's, you know, the old Iroquois way is our names are actually given to us as kind of a charter, if you will.
Uh-huh.
My native name is Bigaliwakwa, which means she sings.
Oh, wow. How nice is that?
Who would have figured that out?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I mean, the elders go, okay, that's what she's supposed to be doing.
How serendipitous.
I mean, yeah. Or she lifts the voice. That's what it means. She lifts the voice or she sings. And the music is all an integral part, of course, of our culture. And just feature that, you know, there's a person. Maybe he is a jester. Maybe he makes people laugh all the time. So that's what he's supposed to be doing.
We often in our family, we'd always say, you know, play to your strengths, you know, live up to your calling, you know, find out what your calling is first. Then you'll be happy your entire life, you know, and I think everyone searches for things that are, one, are not within their grasp, and two, are really not something that they want to do.
Right. And you know, waking up in the morning and dreading the day has got to be awful. Waking up in the morning and saying, oh, I can't wait for this day. I'm so excited. I can't wait to be who I'm supposed to be and do what I'm supposed to be doing. I mean, imagine that. Everyone on the planet looking forward to the day. Not dreading the day, you know. Not wishing away the day or figuring out some sort of drug to change the day.
You know, that's a good point. You know, people, escapism, and I think it's, you know, it's a very common phrase. People saying, oh, gosh, if I can just make it through this day.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, why
just one day at a time?
Yeah.
That I'm not so crazy about. I'll be honest, because, you know what, I think life is such a blessing and a journey. I mean, in the Iroquois way, we think of every single moment as a blessing or a thanksgiving. So every element of life, we give thanks for. And, you know, the latest album that I just recorded, and I'd love to get you all a copy, is called Life Givers. And it's about the cycles of life of a woman from the heart beating inside the womb all the way to some people would call the end, but it's not the end. It's called She Returns Home.
Oh, okay.
And when we believe that we leave this plane, we walk along the Milky Way and our ancestors are there waiting for us as with their arms outstretched as a welcoming back to the land where we came from. And for me, you know, I realize that a lot of people live life in fear of birth, in fear of death, in fear of relationships and fear of love and fear of loneliness, all these fears. I'm saying on this particular recording, I kind of embrace each element of the life cycle of a woman, saying, okay, here it is. You know, here's what it is. And embracing that, you know, as opposed to like fighting it. I had this woman, an elder who told me one time, and I was like 9 months pregnant. I was really ready to have this baby, and she became a 10-month baby.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, because she was breech. And this elder woman told me, she goes, Joanne, your body is made to have a child.
Right.
She goes, so you will be the one to decide, let your body do what it's supposed to do or fight it. It's natural. So it's natural to be born. It's natural to die. It's natural to live. It's natural to sing. It's natural to just be. So, I mean, I more than ever in my life, I've realized that life should be lived. So, yes, feel the pain. Feel the grief when you lose someone. Feel the love that you have for someone. Feel it. Don't be afraid of it, because that's what life is. It is breathing, it's singing, it's sharing, and it's just being. So this is what this latest recording of mine is all about.
Oh, I really look forward to hearing that. Joanne, is there a website that people can go to?
Most certainly. JoanneShenandoah.com, that's for sure. And all my missions are on there, including Hiawatha Institute. Also, I'm coming up with a new production. I'm working with the hospice children. I did a song this summer for 51 most beautiful children who lost someone in their life, and I wrote a new song with that. I'm working on a new music video in April, and just finished my latest album called Life Givers, celebration of women and life cycles of women, and Project Peace on Earth, which is just above and beyond my expectations of, you know, what music could bring to people in different places of the earth. And I'm just really grateful you all had me on the show.
Oh, we're just delighted that you came on, and you certainly have quite a few projects going all at once. And I encourage everyone to go out and get your new album. All right. Well, thank you so very much.
To learn more about Joanne Shenandoah, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Je suis né le jour le plus froid du monde. On dit que je suis né avec le cœur gelé. On dirait même qu'on m'a porté à bout de ventre en haut de la colline qui surplombe la ville et ses clochers.
A 2011 Audio Award finalist, winner of the Audiophile Earphones Award, and a 2010 Audiophile Best Book of the Year, The Boy with a Cuckoo Clock Heart has international appeal. Edinburgh, 1874. Born with a frozen heart, Jack is near dead when his mother abandons him to the care of Dr. Madeline, witch doctor, midwife, protector of orphans, who saves Jack by placing a cuckoo clock in his chest. It is in her orphanage that Jack grows up amid tear-filled flasks, eggs containing memories, and a man with a musical spine. Dr. Madeline warns Jack that his heart is too fragile for strong emotions. He must never, ever fall in love. But of course, he does, on his 10th birthday, and with head over heels abandoned for a bespectacled young street performer with a soul-stirring voice. But it's not only Jack's heart that's at risk, it's his very life. Now begins a wild journey of escape and pursuit, from Edinburgh to Paris to Andalusia, where Jack will finally learn the great joys and the great costs of owning a fully formed heart.
They warned me not to climb to the top of Arthur's Seat. Everyone said the old lady was mad, thinks my mother. The poor girl looks like she's dying of cold. If the doctor manages to mend my own heart, I reckon she'll have an even bigger job with my mother's. Here I am, lying stark naked, waiting on the workbench next to the worktop, my chest clamped in a metal vise. And I'm starting to feel seriously cold. An ancient black cat with a servile manner is perched on a kitchen table. The doctor has made him a pair of glasses, green frames to match his eyes. Stylish. Nonchalantly, he watches the scene. All he's missing is a financial newspaper and a cigar. Dr. Madeline starts scouring the shelf of wind-up clocks. She removes a number of different models, severe-looking angular ones, round ones, wooden ones, and metal ones, showing off to the tips of their clock hands. With one ear, she listens to my defective heart, with the other to the tick-tocks of the clocks. She scrunches her eyes, apparently unsatisfied. She's like one of those dreadful old ladies who takes a quarter of an hour to choose a tomato at the market. All of a sudden, her face lights up. "This one!" she shrieks, stroking the gears of an old cuckoo clock. The clock measures approximately 4 centimeters by 8 and is made entirely from wood, with the exception of its mechanical parts, dial and handles. The finish is rather rustic. Sturdy, thinks the doctor out loud. The cuckoo, tall as my little finger bone, is red with black eyes. Its beak, fixed open, gives it the air of a dead bird. "You'll have a good heart with this clock, and it'll be an excellent match for your bird-like head," Dr. Madeline says to me. "I'm not so keen on this bird business." That said, she is trying to save my life, so I don't quibble.
A phantasmagorical novel. Book list. Matthias Malzo is the lead singer of the French rock band Dionysus. The Boy with a Cuckoo Clock Cart is his third novel. It's the first to be translated into English. He now lives in Paris. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to blackstoneaudio.com.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine Inc. presentation and was recorded in a Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineinc.com. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
And I'm Maya Seligman. Looking forward to seeing you at a film festival soon.
I know I'll be there.
Always great fun. See you next time.
Sayonara!